Session number 6175, reel 5.
Mrs. Jones, tape 5. Did you notice any other difference in customs the short time you were in Wales? Features of Welsh life. Was this a mining area at all?
Not really. Llanelli is more factories in the outskirts of Llanelli. Enamelling, saucepans and things like that they make up there. Stoving and that kind of thing. No, I didn't really notice anything much different about it. We imagined we were going to a sort of smoky place, and it was a really nice surprise to find that it was a nice clean town. I haven't been back since, so I couldn't compare it, but I would think that as Welsh towns go, that it was really one of the nicest.
Did you have anything to do with religion there? Did, for instance, you go to chapel?
No, we didn't. I would think that the our host and hostess would have been Church of England, and we went to church on the odd Sundays with them, but we certainly didn't. They didn't say you must come to church or you must go to chapel or that sort of thing.
Did they speak with a Welsh accent, your host and hostess?
Yes, indeed, yes, he did.
They were both Welsh people?
Yes, they were.
Had they a family?
No, they hadn't had a family. No, they were just the two of them.
Was there any chance of your parents visiting you in Wales while you were there?
It was never suggested, and I think I would have probably thought it was much too expensive and too far to come for them. And my mother being at work then in the Ministry of Food, and my father in shop, the hours were always very long in shops in those days. You worked all day Saturday and quite late, so the opportunity wouldn't have been very great, really.
Is there anything else you can tell me about schooling in Wales? You know, obviously you were separated from the younger girls because you were swatting up for your matric.
Yes.
As you have explained. But what happened to the rest of the school? Where were they put?
They were put in smaller schools. I don't remember there being one main school as there was in Ashford. I think that they were in various schools around. They fitted them in. Added them to the classrooms. I don't think that schools up in Wales have been quite so full as we'd been used to. And so they put in extra desks and that sort of thing, and they seem to integrate more. I think the teachers integrated and that sort of thing. Probably took bigger classes or something like that. But it really didn't make a lot of impression on me, I must say. It wasn't a thing I was interested in.
If that would have been an area you missed out on, I imagine,
quite,
wouldn't it,
yes,
if you were,
yes,
separated out? Right, well, could I ask you now a little more about your return to London? When you went back at this time, which would have been the summer of 1940, is that right? Just before the Battle of Britain?
Yes.
Were there any obvious differences in London at that time? More preparations, do you think?
Oh, a lot more preparations. All the windows had got scrim on them and the sticky paper and that sort of thing. They were obviously expecting aircraft to come over. But when I first went home, there was nothing like that, or obviously my parents would have said, you've got to go back. It wasn't till later on when I was at work that the Battle of Britain started, and we had constant air raid sirens, and we'd rush down to the basement. And we spent quite a lot of time in the basement, actually, when I was at work, when I come to think of it. Because the Battle of Britain was on and there were quite a lot of dogfights and the air raid sirens would go. By this time, my brother was in the Royal Air Force, stationed in Wiltshire. And so he didn't see very much of any wartime activities. And I remember he came home on leave during the time that the Battle of Britain was on. And he was horrified to think that we were not taking great much notice about the air raids and that the windows weren't shuttered. And he was in the garden hammering away at some shutters to go at the windows in our semi-basement, which is where we slept eventually when the Blitz started. We did start off in the Anderson shelter. This would be in October when the Blitz really started. And the first time I remember an air raid that was really severe, my sister and my cousin and I were in a cinema in Camberwell Green, the Odeon. and we were watching a film, and we kept thinking, oh dear, it's thundering outside, we'll get wet when we go home. And when we came out, it was actually an air raid going on, and there were a lot of fires we could see in the distance, and nobody at the cinema had said you should leave or anything like that. We just sat through the film quite happily. My brother was quite adamant that we shouldn't sleep upstairs at all. And so I remember him thinking that we should all sleep downstairs, and various mattresses were put downstairs. We had started to go into the Anderson shelter, but it was so claustrophobic, and you had to go to the end of the garden, and if you turned out in the middle of the night, this was terrible. Although I do remember one night, and we always remember it. We were in the Anderson shelter and it got quite late, and we could hear gunfire and bombs, and suddenly there was a screech and a bomb hit the ground. Well, my father had fallen asleep. He was the only one who had. And he heard this terrific bang and he said, "Don't panic, don't panic." And he was the only one who was really panicking. He didn't realise what it was, and the rest of us were just sitting round there. But anyway, eventually we did get so used to it that we decided we were not going to go into the Anderson shelter. And we all used to sleep in one room in the basement, semi-basement, with the shutters at the window. And one awful thing about it was that my sister and I had started saying, "Oh, we'll be all right tonight, touch wood." And after that, we were frightened to go to bed without crossing our fingers with a matchstick between them. So every night we went to sleep with this matchstick between our fingers, touching wood or not. And she was working up in London in the Office of Works in Horse Ferry Road. So she had the journey every morning after having quite a sleepless night, quite a long journey, tripping over hoses and whatnot, you know, to get to work. And I continued working at the mail order firm. But unfortunately, during one of the air raids when we were down in the basement, by stroke of bad luck, a bomb actually came down the air shaft, the air vent shaft, and exploded. We heard it thud down. Then we heard it, then it exploded. And I remember this buzzing in my ears and blackness and thinking, oh, I'm on my way to heaven. And then coming to with dust in our mouths and that sort of thing. And they were trying to get those of us who could get out, outside, so that they could check on who was missing and who had been killed. And unfortunately, some of the pipes were fractured, and people who were knocked out were, some of them drowned, quite a lot of them. Another awful thing was that I got outside and a kind motorist stopped my friend and I, well, presumably she was a friend of mine, I knew her at work, she wasn't a great friend, and said, "I'll take you home, where do you want to go?" And we got in this car and off we went home. And we went back next day, and of course people looked at me and said, "Oh, you're reported dead." And really, the feeling, I couldn't describe the feeling I had about it. And I went back on two mornings, and then when the air raid siren went, I got in such a state that I said I couldn't go back. Funnily enough, there wasn't a lot of damage to the building, because the bomb had gone in, exploded underneath, and had spread, the blast had spread underneath the building, but hadn't damaged the building greatly. In fact, the firm is Freeman's, and it's still there in Clapham, Freeman's Mail Order Service. Anyway, I was off for a few weeks, and I remember I didn't go to the doctor, but I used to get very nervous when the siren went. I used to get in quite a state. And so I remember going over to the chemist, my mother taking to me to the chemist. In those days, a chemist would advise you on what to take. You didn't go to the doctor very much. And he advised me to have a bottle of Nerve Tone. And this Nerve Tone, for the rest of the war, I think we all took these Nerve Tone. We must have really been hooked on it. Anyway, I finally decided I'd have to get a job of some description. And my uncle, who was in, he was on the Whitley Council of the Civil Service. He was really in the post office, but he had a contact with somebody he knew on the Whitley Council. And he said there was a vacancy in the Ministry of Labour, and would I like to go for an interview? And I went for an interview and I got this job, and I started work then up in town in Westminster, and I carried on with that until I was 21 and I had to register for national service or something. I remember my sister being very, very annoyed with me because at the time she wanted me to volunteer to go into the WAF as my two cousins had done. And I was the one that was saying, oh, well, we'd be called up anyway. We might as well wait until then. I think I'd had enough of being away. But actually, when the time came and I did have to register, I was too late and I was sent into munitions and I had to go into an aircraft factory. But anyway, I'm going ahead of myself because I haven't really finished with the Blitz. We spent these nights in the basement, and eventually one night came when a landmine dropped behind the house. And we could hear crashing and we didn't know what was happening. And we all managed to get out. The windows all went. And we managed to get out and we went to an air raid shelter which had been built in the crescent in front of the house. And we stayed there for the rest of the night. And in the morning we went out and the house was really, the top of the house was in quite a state. There were no windows in. And so we'd had this arrangement with my uncle who lived in North London that if either of us were bombed, we'd each go to the other. And so we collected a few bits that we could, suitcases and whatnot, and we went over to North London, to Southgate, where he lived. And there was my mother, my father, my grandmother, and my sister and myself. And really, he must have been horrified to see us. But anyway, they took us in and they didn't make any bones about it, and we all crowded in. We stayed there. My grandmother, who was really a lively little soul, she kept going back to the old house in Peckham Road and sorting things out. I remember she bought the budgie and one day, and because we didn't have any transport, it was all done on bus and underground. My mother, I think she went over now and again because she was still working at the food office, so she did go over back to work now and again. And my father had to keep going to South London, to the Elephant and Garter, to work. And in the meantime, my uncle and aunt were scouting around to find somewhere for us to live. And we found a house, an older type house, fairly near to them in Palmer's Green, which we were able to rent. And we all moved in, and it seemed quite like a palace. You know, it was much bigger than the house we'd had, just two stories, the normal type. And we all moved in there. My mother transferred to a tax office in Finsbury Park and carried on working. And my sister and I travelled up to Westminster to work, continued. And, I mean, I tell my sons now that they don't know what it's like to travel and wonder whether your office is going to be there when you get there and have all sorts of detours and unexploded bombs and things that you... And yet people arrived at the office on time and didn't really think very much of it, you know. You still went to the cinemas and things like that.
Did your nerves improve after this?
Oh, yes. I didn't really have any more trouble. Otherwise, I couldn't have carried on travelling up to town.
Can you remember the bombing of Parliament?
No, I don't. It didn't really stick in my mind, no. I remember thinking how awful the Buckingham Palace had been. There'd been a bomb near Buckingham Palace. I remember seeing the cinema newsreels of that and seeing the Queen and the King and the Queen outside looking at the damage on the newsreels. Well, we hadn't been in North London all that long before I had to register for national service, and I thought that being in the Ministry of Labour I would probably be exempt because a lot of civil servants were. But that wasn't the case. And I was sent to a government training centre in Edmonton, which I could travel to each day from Palmer's Green. And I started off learning to use a capstan lathe. And then I suppose perhaps I was perhaps quite good at it, or they realised I probably could do something more. And so I went on a course for aircraft inspection, not an actual aircraft, but inspecting the parts for aircraft. And I eventually got a job fairly near home in East Barnet. It was a converted garage. And there were six of us that were doing inspection. And we had quite a time because most of the men were exempt Irishmen who were working on these lathes and things, capstan operators. And they weren't averse to it. If you turned down a lot of their stuff, they would wait until you'd gone, and then they'd put it all in their finished work underneath, you know, so that if you weren't careful, you'd get into trouble for letting stuff go through. And they were working on parts for mosquito aircraft, and they were all in a very new metal called duralumin. It was very, very light because the mosquito was made mostly of wood, and so the screws and things had to be as light as possible. Well, I'm going on a bit because now, later on, what was I going to say?
What was the attitude of these men towards you as ladies doing that sort of work?
Well, you see, we were only young girls, and they thought, whatever do they know about it, you know. They really resented it. And the setter, there would be two setters for all the machines, and they were responsible for tooling up. And if you said some of the jobs were wrong and they'd got to retool it, of course they weren't best pleased because they were losing their bonuses. So really we were resented all the time. It wasn't a very happy time. I remember them saying to me they had one girl on sometimes at night, that they shouldn't really have done so. And when it was my turn to go on, I got in such a state. I don't think it was only the fact of being there at night. I think I probably wouldn't be able to manage all these, you know, men. If they said, oh, it's all right, I probably wouldn't bother to argue with them, you know. I remember my mother going and saying, she can't possibly come, you know, she's not well enough. And I think she explained probably that I'd had one or two do's, and I stayed on days, and the men did the night work. That's how life went on until... well, the end of the war, really.
How about the V1s and V2s, rockets?
Well, in the house in North London, we had Morrison shelters. They were the metal things that you had inside your house. You could put a mattress underneath them. Well, we had two of these, one in what was the breakfast room and one was in the dining room. And my mother and father slept in one and we slept in the other. It was a horrible feeling. We hated it, really. And if we could, we slept upstairs and sort of just came down. But the V1s then started. And they were horrible. I think they were worse than the V2s because the V2s, you had no anticipation at all. If they came, they came. And if they hit you, they'd hit you. But with a V1, when you heard it come and you heard it cut out, you would cringe, you know, hoping that it was going to hit someone else. It was awful, really. But that's all you did. You just hoped that it didn't hit you. But with a V2, when they first started and we heard these big explosions and everyone said, oh, it's some gas mains, and there were all sorts of stories going around. The government didn't release it very early, what the actual weapon was. And, you know, I think the V1s were the worst because of the anticipation, definitely.
Do you think it affected morale, the V1? Were people more affected by those than, say, that during the Blitz, the earlier Blitz?
I don't really think so. I think they still thought all those so-and-so, you know, fancy doing that this to us, and how dare they, you know. We kept hearing that the RAF were going over to raid the rocket bases and the V1 bases. And really, you know, the Churchill speeches buoyed everybody up. Every time he made a speech, everybody thought, oh, well, he must be right. He must know what he's talking about.
Did you feel that?
Yes, yes.
They were important for you, were they, the Churchill speeches?
I think they were, very. I think he did a good job in that way. I don't know what he did for the rest of the war, but, I mean, he certainly knew how to get to the people and to not let people give up. I don't really ever remember thinking that the Germans would win. I don't think it ever occurred to us.
Can you remember D-Day vividly?
D-Day, quite vivid in the placards on the newspapers and all that sort of thing. You'd see the newspaper sellers with, you know, D-Day. I remember, I think we used to have Picture Post or something like that, and that had quite a lot about it. But we used to go and see the newsreels, and we used to hear the radio reports. But that didn't stick in my mind quite so much, you know, as VE Day, when the war finished at VE Day. I mean, we just went mad. We had bonfire, and we had a fire in the road, and everybody dancing round it and that sort of thing. And my brother came down, and we went up to London and went to the palace and shouted for everybody. You know, we really had a wonderful time.
Did you ever long to get back to the peace of the countryside during this period of sort of blitz and the rockets?
No. I never thought, oh, I wish I was away. I think I would rather have been with my family sharing what they were sharing than to be away and wonder what was going on.
Do you think there have been any lasting effects of evacuation on your life when you look back on it?
No, none at all. No.
How about your education? Did you suffer?
Well, I don't think I did, really, because in the event, the civil service had to reduce their standards to a certain extent. Civil service examinations went out of the window, and everybody who went in became temporary. And it wasn't till later, after I'd been in the aircraft factory, that I went back to... I went into the tax office where my mother had been, Finsbury Park, and then I took the civil service examination for a clerical officer. And, you know, got through and then went up to London.
But when you think about that period of evacuation, how do you look back on it? Do you think it was an interesting period, a happy period?
I wouldn't say it was a particularly happy period. It was an experience. I think that's all you can say. It wasn't really one thing or the other. I think I was glad I came back and didn't go away for another year. I think if you were away and you knew your people were having the blitz and bombed, you'd be more upset than that if you were there amongst it. I think in a way that my brother suffered more. He had quite a pleasant war. He was at Yatesbury in Wiltshire nearly the whole time at a radio school instructing. And he saw very little of the war, unless he came home on leave, and then he really saw what was going on. You know?
You were saying earlier on that the home you felt happiest in was Grandma's and Grandpa's. And that's because you were treated as one of a family. Can you think of anything else that's necessary in order that an evacuee does settle down? What is necessary from the home?
Well, they mustn't be treated any differently from anybody else who's there. They mustn't be given any different food. They mustn't be given any more privileges other than anything else. You know, some of them were probably underprivileged compared with the family, but it was just as bad to be more privileged, really. Because you were set aside, you know, you probably didn't enjoy yourself very much.
And what do you think the child in turn has to offer? Do you think anything is necessary from the child who's going into this situation?
Well, if they were wise enough, you know, if they were old enough, I suppose, and wise enough, they would help as much as they could, you know, help around the house and assist in what was going on, but you're not old enough when you go away to realise that that's what you should be doing. You're so used to your own family where you all muck in and your mother tells you to do this if she wants you to do it, and she doesn't bother if she doesn't want you to do it. That when you go away, well, in my case, it didn't occur to me that I should be doing very much.
I wonder how important age is as a factor. Now, do you think it was easier for someone of 15 to cope with that situation than, say, an infant?
No, I should think the infants were better because they were put into a home probably with other children of their own age. They were told what to do. They were shepherded here and there and everywhere so that they had a good idea of what they should be doing. We were really left to our own devices, probably much too much.
I should have asked you earlier, but you were a young girl of 15. Were there any sort of problems associated with puberty when you were evacuated?
No. If in that, in 1939, the thought hadn't occurred to us. I mean, when I say that, we wouldn't mind walking along with the boys from school and that sort of thing, but there was no, nothing else we ever thought of. No. Yeah.
How about having your periods, you know, but being in a strange place? Did that
No, that wasn't complicated at all. No, I would cope with that as I had done at home. I would, you know, didn't have any problems.
If the situation arose today and you were asked to send your children away to be evacuated, how would you react to that? Would you send them?
I think I would if it was a question of the same sort of situation where the whole school was going to go, because I feel that, for one thing, to stay in their own school situation is much better than being left at home and you'll probably think, well, what shall I do with the child? Can they go to school? Should I teach them myself? Will they have too long to think about what's happening and why their school friends have gone away? I think it was much better to go, and I would certainly probably do the same thing.
Have you maintained any contacts with the people or the areas where you were evacuated? Do you ever go back?
No, none at all, unfortunately. I often think now that I'm living fairly near that I should go and have a look at Ashwell, but it's changed so much, I'm told, that we probably wouldn't recognise anywhere. And I would think Stubbs Cross is probably a big bungalow town or something by now. One of these days I might go back.
Well, Mrs. Jones, thank you very much indeed.